Thank you, Mr. Fenchel. Good afternoon, everyone. It's nice to see your smiling faces out there. Hey, it was morning. It turned afternoon. You know, it can happen in the car. Maybe it's happened to you in the air. If not in that location, perhaps it happened to you at sea. Not at sea, perhaps in altitude. Have you been car sick? Have you been air sick? Have you been altitude sick? Have you been heart sick? It's not fun having any sort of illness, is it? And it doesn't seem to matter where the illness takes place, it's still not enjoyable. I can remember one feast while I was a teenager. We were at an oceanside feast, and just as we were getting there before the feast, I started feeling a bit off. And then I got a fever and had to miss the first night service. I had to miss the first holy day. Now, the one benefit was that I could sleep on the patio and listen to the waves crash on the rocks, which helped me sleep a little bit, but it still did not make the illness more enjoyable. I was still sick, after all. And we don't like being sick, do we? But what I'd like to do, brethren, in the second split here, is to look at a sickness that Christians need to experience. We'll look at one sickness, that Christians need to experience. Let's start in the book of Matthew. Turn with me, please, to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10, we'll read verses 27 through 31. Christ is speaking and says, "What I say to you in the dark, tell in the light. And what you hear whispered, proclaim from the housetops. Do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father, and even the hairs on your head are all counted. So do not be afraid. You are of more value than many sparrows." Now, you may or may not know this, but this is no longer possible in Canada because there is no more penny. It's been decommissioned. It's gone. Except for in the theoretical sense, if you happen to engage in credit transactions. There is no cash penny any longer. So maybe you have to buy more than two sparrows at a time. I'm not sure which. But the point here is evaluation placed comparing sparrows, which God created, and mankind in God's image. And God shows Christ's example here, tells us that while he created both, there's a special value placed on people, far above even sparrows, some of which we may see flitting around outside today. Let's take a look now at Psalms. We'll look at Psalm 104. Psalm 104, we'll start reading verse 16, and we'll go through verse 22. "The trees of the Lord are full of sap." And I love this in the springtime when we tap maple trees. I'm so thankful they are full of sap. "The trees of the Lord are full of sap. The cedars of Lebanon, which he planted, where the birds make their nests. The stork has her home in the fir trees. The high hills are for the wild goats." Did you see the headline a couple weeks ago about a tree trimmer, I think in Washington State, who was contracted by the U.S. Postal Service somewhere up in Washington to remove a nest? There were storks, or were they herons? Herons. They were herons making a nest and were making a mess of the trucks below. Birds eat, and then they uneat. And apparently the uneating was creating a problem. And so the contractor was sent to trim the nest to make it less inviting for the birds. In doing so, some of the birds fell, and he got in trouble because they got hurt, and it was a problem. But they like to be up high. There's a place for them. The stork has her home in the fir trees. The high hills are for the wild goats. The cliffs are a refuge for the rock badgers or the hyrax, depending on your translation. He appointed the moon for seasons. The sun knows it's going down. You make darkness, and it's night, in which all the beasts of the forest creep about. And this is not more evident to those who go camping. When the only thing separating you from the ferocious beast with fangs and claws is a thin layer of nylon. Boy, are the bushes alive then, aren't they? In the safety of our own homes, it seems as if the neighborhood is pretty dark and quiet. But get inside something made of nylon, and it sounds like you're in the middle of the Serengeti, doesn't it? Went on a bicycle trip in Waiau with some friends one year, and we stopped at various places in the range close to the Rockies. And at nighttime, the guy who shared the tent with me, he was convinced that a bear was after him, tracking him from camp spot to camp spot as if it had GPS and he had a chip on him and the bear was following him. Problem was, this was before GPS. But he was convinced there was something stalking him each night. Each twig that would break, he would, "That's a bear. I think it's a bear. Do you smell that? I smell a bear." And I could just imagine the little chipmunks outside hearing him describe their ferocity as being bear-like. They must have been so proud after they left. And it is night in which all the beasts of the forest creep about. The young lions roar after their prey and seek their food from God. Verse 22, when the sun rises, they gather together and lie down in their dens. The point is, God has created a place for his creation. Those critters that we don't often see, God has a place for them. The birds that nest so high, God created a special place for them so they can be high. Others prefer the nest low. He provides a place for them too. God makes a home for these creatures. Let's talk now about Abraham. Let's turn to Acts chapter 7. We'll read about Abraham. Acts 7 verses 2 through 7. Here Stephen is giving a defense. He's on trial in a kangaroo court, and he is been given an opportunity to respond to the charges presented against him. And Stephen responds, he said, "Brethren and fathers, listen. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he dwelt in Haran, and said to him, 'Get out of your country and from your relatives, and come to a land that I will show you.' Then he came out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Haran, and from there, when his father was dead, he moved from this land in which you now dwell." He moved to this land, rather. "And God gave him no inheritance in it, not even though to set his foot on. And even when Abraham had no child, he promised to give him for a possession and to his descendants after him. But God spoke in this way, that his descendants would dwell in a foreign land and that they would be brought into bondage. They would be oppressed 400 years. So commentaries will point out that Abraham owned no land except for what? Except for a cave in the field where the cave was. That's right. And that was to bury Sarah. And you can read that in Genesis chapter 23. So Abraham was promised wonderful things, great things, huge landholdings that we can hardly even imagine. Did he receive any of that? No, he did not. That was something that would come to fruition generations later, much like we were hearing in the first split. He did not see that. He did not have a permanent home in which to live. Did he? It must have been bittersweet for him to see these promises or to hear these promises and see them in his mind's eye. And the only realization of property was for burial. That would have been bittersweet at best, I think, for Abraham. Let's take a look at Psalm again. Psalm 84, we'll read verses 1 through 3. Psalm 84, I believe this is a psalm of the sons of Korah. Let's see, 84 comes after 83, doesn't it? Okay, good. Can you read this without hearing the psalm? I can't do it either. How lovely is your tabernacle, O Lord of hosts! My soul longs, yes, even faints, for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Even the sparrow has found a home, and the swallows a nest for herself, where she may lay her young. So here the psalmist is familiar with the courts, with the tabernacle, where God's meeting place was with the people, close to where the Holy of Holies was, where the laver was, the meeting place. And yet, there's a longing to be even closer. Doesn't it sound like the psalmist is lamenting they couldn't be as close to where God was as, say, the sparrows or the swallow? That's the feeling I get from this particular passage. Yes, we're close. We can be very close, but we can't remain there like the sparrow can or the swallow. So somehow the living quarters of whoever wrote this, I'm sure they were lovely. They may even had a view of some of these grounds. But they were longing to be even closer, to even just be in a nest where the sparrow was. Now, I don't know how many nests you've seen. I've seen a few nests in my time, and they don't strike me as being particularly homey. They seem like they have debris in them that I'd rather not be around. And yet, the psalmist is referencing these nests as a place to desire to be. We had a bird feeder on our window for many years. It would attach itself to the casing of the window and stay there on the outside of the window. So you could open the window on the inside, reach around and fill it up, and close it back up again. The back of the feeder had a film, two-way glass, so that you could see through it, and the birdie could only see itself, not know it's inches away from something terrifying. It was beautiful, especially in the wintertime. You know, when the snow falls and the birds are convinced the next ice age is coming, and anytime they see food, they have to eat it all or risk starvation. That time of year is beautiful to watch those birds come in, especially the cardinals, how vibrant they are. The summer was nice as well when the different summer birds would come by. Occasionally, depending on the food, we'd have doves land. And to be that close to the birds was a remarkable thing. Once we had, I would visit nests, like I mentioned, but once we had this particular feeder in our kitchen window, and one spring morning, we didn't really have spring this year, but remember what spring was like when we used to have it? One spring morning, I opened up the windows all around so we could let the house breathe, and it smelled wonderful because of the fragrance of the honeysuckle coming in. And I was putting away my dishes. Why do you look surprised when I say I was putting away my dishes? I clean up after myself occasionally. I was putting away my dishes, and I turned my back to the window, went back into the dining room, and I heard a sound. It sounded like the metal bowl that was in the dish drainer moving. I thought, it's the dishes shifting. It's probably nothing. I heard it again, and this time I heard a flutter of wings, and I turned the corner to see coming from the kitchen down the stairs was a house wren. And so it took me the next half hour to get that bird out of the house before I left for work that day. But it was nice to see those birds visiting me. And I wonder if they had the same impression I have of birds' nests. It's got some clutter in that nest. I don't think I'd like to be there. Here the psalmist was lamenting that these birds could be closer to God or closer to God's temple or tabernacle than they themselves were able to be. So we looked at Abraham, we looked at the time of the kings here with this particular psalm. What about the faithful in general? Let's talk about them. Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11, verses 32 through 40. This is in a section subheaded, "By Faith They Overcame." And what more shall I say? Verse 32, "For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions." Verse 34, "Quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. And still others had trials of mockings and scourgings. Yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned when they were sawn in two. They were tempted, slain by the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. All these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise, God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us." They wandered in deserts and mountains, dens, caves. What kind of place did God provide for them? The term "cave, sweet cave" probably isn't going to sell as many placards as "home, sweet home," will it? When I was younger, not a parent, had free time, I enjoyed spelunking. I also enjoyed going in caves. And one particular cave we went to in Missouri, we were shown there, the guide had gone when he was a teenager. He was now, I think, in his 40s at that particular time, and was able to find the way back to this particular cave. He remembered a fallen, I think, hickory tree on the bank, and thankfully the tree hadn't rotted, so he could find that same log, and we found our way in. The entrance was rather steep. You kind of had to squat and slide and hope you didn't fall. But we made it in and wandered around the main cavern area, and the path went off to the left and around a bit of a formation. And some of the formations can be quite beautiful, especially in the light, when they turn the lights on in some of these caves, Mammoth Cave being one of them, or Muramak Caverns being another. Some of those formations are just gorgeous, and the names they come up with them to describe them are fairly accurate. Well, this cave really didn't have any of those pretty features. What made it remarkable was what was on the ceiling. They were moving. And I didn't know about them when we went in. And by the time we got to the back, we started hearing squeak noises, or except a lot of them altogether. And by the time we got to the very back, it dead-ended, and it was elevated maybe 15 feet higher than the main cavern. And all of a sudden, we felt the temperature drop. It was cooler inside than outside, but all of a sudden, the temperature dropped. And then we started hearing a sound, something like whoosh. And we turned our flashlight beams towards the front of the cave, and there were swirling these bats. Apparently, they'd had enough of our presence and were inviting us to leave in their own special way. And at one point, they were swirling around us. We hunkered down, and they started bouncing off of us. Apparently, their sonar was out of order. One of them hit my wife's leg or my leg, and was laying on the ground there right in front of us, and the flashlights are all pointed down, and I'm looking at this bat squirming with its mouth doing funny things, and I kept saying to myself, it's a bird with hair. It's not a rat with wings. It's a bird with hair. It was not my finest moment, but it was certainly a good illustration that a cave does not make a nice home, at least not to me. The bat seemed to like it, but I was not happy in that particular cave. I still went back to others, but not back to this particular one. Here the faithful were driven from their homes into the desert, into caves, where they had to live. They had to make do for the time being. We're still in Hebrews 11. Let's take a look at verses 13 through 16. The heavenly hope, that's what the subsection says in my Bible. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them. They embraced them and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. They sought a homeland, didn't they? They were strangers and pilgrims. Have you seen the movie The Exodus with Paul Newman? Have you heard of Paul Newman? Okay. In this particular film, Paul Newman plays a central figure in the Jewish resistance as they struggle for nationhood, as they struggle to take Palestine away from British protectoratism to their own nation as they try to develop a homeland. And it was quite a struggle for them. So many of them were being smuggled into the country from various parts of Europe where they had received tremendous persecution. And it was quite a story to speak of the very delicate situation that the British had put themselves into, making promises that were mutually exclusive to both Arabs and to the Jews, and the struggle that the Jews then played to get their own nation, to be able to chart their own destiny, as it were. Because they came from a place and they felt like they had no homeland, that they were strangers suddenly in the country where they had been for generations. So that was the faithful. Let's talk now about Christ himself. Let's turn to the book of Matthew. The book of Matthew will be in chapter 8. We'll read verses 18 through 20. Verse 18, and when Jesus saw great multitudes about him, he gave a command to depart to the other side. Then a certain scribe came to him, Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said to him, Foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Then another of his disciples said to him, Lord, let me first go bury my father. And Jesus said to him, Follow me, and let the dead bury their own dead. Now, what's interesting to note here is that he would have been relatively close to Capernaum, where other commentaries talk about him having either a home where he had a place to call his own, he had a lease there. There's plenty of indication, Matthew 9 and Mark 2, that he had a place close by, yet he made the statement he had no place to lay his head. Why the difference? He said, foxes have a hole, birds have a nest. We were watching some robins this year and their fledglings as they went from ugly-looking critters to very awkward-looking critters to being birds. It was quite a process to watch. We would get a ladder out and carefully peer into the nest. And it's amazing how sharp those robins' eyes are. They learned even the sight of that blue ladder meant trouble. And we didn't mess with them. We were just observing them. And one particular morning, I think it was a Sunday morning, we're getting ready to do some yard work, and one of the boys burst through the back door. "Dad, Dad, the birds fell out of their nest." I said, "Oh, dear. We need to fix this, don't we?" So out comes the ladder again, and I peered up. This time I got to the top of the ladder, looked inside, and these birds had gotten huge. There was no room in this nest for four of them, yet four of them there were. Well, four minus one. We'd scooped it up. I put it back in the nest, and no sooner than its bottom hit the nest than another one jumped out. And it became kind of this game of whack-a-mole. You know, you put one back in, and one falls out. You pick up that one, two fall out. And I could almost hear the soundtrack for the Hungarian saber dance. You know, the one where they spin the plates, that song. That's the song I was hearing in my head, because I knew any moment the neighbor was going to let the dogs out, and they were going to be coming by, barking and doing who knows what to these birds. But there we were, trying to help. Now, thankfully, I had some shims, and I was able to put some shims just so and pad it with some sawdust that we happened to have and made the nest bigger. And then I did my research and found out that the birds don't need that. They routinely jump out of the nest, and the mother keeps track of where they are and feeds them where they are on the ground until they learn to fly again. That would have been useful to know before the ladder came out. But God provided all that instinct for these birds. They had their nest. God provides them a nest. But what about for us? Christ himself said he had no place to lay his head. The faithful were wandering. How about the early converts? Let's turn to Acts chapter 2. Acts chapter 2, we'll read verses 5 through 12. You might as well put a ribbon in this particular page. You may find yourself going back here in the next 24 hours or so. Acts chapter 2, starting in verse 5. "And there were dwelling in Jerusalem Jews, devout men from every nation under heaven. And when this sound occurred, the multitude came together and were confused, because everyone heard them speak in his own language. Then they were all amazed and marveled, saying to one another, 'Look, are not these all who speak Galileans? And how is it that we hear each in our own language in which we were born?' Who were they? Parthians and Medes and Elamites, those dwelling in Mesopotamia, Judea and Cappadocia, Pontus and Asia, Phrygia," sounds cold, "Pamphylia, Egypt, and the parts of Libya adjoining Cyrene, visitors from Rome, both Jews and proselytes, Cretans and Arabs. We hear them speaking in our own tongues the wonderful works of God." So here they were in Jerusalem, from all of these different places. Why? Well, because it was the Feast of Pentecost. Why? Because they were commanded to gather together in Jerusalem three times a year, this being one of the three times. Question: where was home to these people? Did they feel more at home in Phrygia or in Crete? Or did they feel more at home in Jerusalem? Were they traveling from someplace? Were they traveling to someplace? They made this trip because they felt compelled to be there. Did they wish they lived closer? Were they reminding their children, "Uncle Mordecai used to have a spot just down the street next to the falafel stand back in whatever year it was"? Did they reminisce like that? There they were gathered together, but they seemed to be in two different places, didn't they? Which was home? How about later Christians? The early Christians we just read about. Let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, we'll read verses 9 through 11. Verse 9, "But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, verse 10, who once were not a people, but are now the people of God, who had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Verse 11, beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. They are being urged as sojourners and pilgrims. Similar language to what we just read. About 100 years ago, the U.S. Mint began a change in their nickels. The nickels they produced were called the Buffalo Nickel. Anybody have a Buffalo Nickel in your pocket? Oh, that's too bad. Who has seen a Buffalo Nickel? Okay, I'm guessing it wasn't recently unless it's in a protective case at home. The new nickel at that time was a bit of a departure from what had been standard. In previous years, the coin had a surface ratio of 1/5 portrait and the balance the field of the coin. Well, this particular nickel, it was the opposite. The majority, 4/5, was the portrait, and only 1/5 then was the coin surface, which made it ideal for a subset of the population who would take those nickels and carve them. Anybody seen a carved Buffalo Nickel? They became known as hobo nickels because so many hobos would take the opportunity to carve a visage in them and then sell that as a keepsake for someone. Now, carving coins was not new at that particular time, but because of the economic downturn of the 30s and the increase of those who were homeless or traveling, then that became far more popular. And in fact, some of the carved nickels became more valuable than the nickel itself because some of the carvers were actually very well known and well regarded. So if you find a hobo nickel, it's good to research it and find out if your particular version may be one of the valuable ones or maybe just one of the ones that I tried to carve and carved poorly, in which case, I'm sorry you went through that pain. But the hobos at the time had a code. Apparently, according to the internet, and everything is true on the internet, they had a code, 1889, by the National Hobo Convention. My membership has since lapsed. But they had a number of codes that they asked their members to subscribe to. And one of them was, when no employment is available, make your own work by using your added talents at crafts. And so this was one of the crafts they used to carve these nickels. Now, hobos, I tried to find research, definitive research. How did they get the name hobo? Does anybody know? One more of the popular notions is it stands for homeward bound. Have you heard that? Have you seen the movie Homeward Bound? With the little animals going home. It's very cute. Homeward bound. So whether or not that is accurate, I don't know for sure, but it is quite popular among those who discuss the topic. Homeward bound. Individuals who are looking for a better opportunity, individuals who didn't feel at place. In fact, most of them would not stay around one location for more than a year. They would constantly be on the move looking for other opportunities, but eventually making their way home, or at least that was the grand design, that they would make their way home. So that is our most modern, widespread use of pilgrim or sojourner in our history. Peter talked to Christians to be as sojourners and pilgrims. Let's turn again to the book of Psalms. I suppose if you want to be technical, let's just turn to Psalms. And we'll read a psalm, number 42, Psalm 42, we'll read verse 4. And again, I challenge you to read this without hearing the lyrics or the song. As the deer pants for the water brooks, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, the living God. When shall I come and appear before my God? My tears have been my food day and night, while they continually say to me, where is your God? Verse 4, when I remember these things, I pour out my soul within me, for I used to go with the multitude when I went with them to the house of God, with the voice of joy and praise, with the multitude that kept a pilgrim feast. A pilgrim feast, one of which we'll be celebrating tomorrow, won't we? Here the psalmist is lamenting to be with the multitude, keeping that pilgrim feast. A pilgrim is someone who is in transition, aren't they? Let's turn over again to the book of Hebrews. For those keeping score, this will be our last passage. Hebrews 11, verses 8 through 10. We'll talk about Abraham again. Verse 8, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance eventually. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. Again, they didn't have GPS. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise, for he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Now, if you want a master builder, this is your guy. Have you done home repairs, apartment repairs, condo repairs? It always takes longer than you anticipate, doesn't it? Because when you tear apart something, more often than not, you discover that the builder previous to you wasn't a master builder. In fact, there's evidence that they didn't have the appropriate tools. And it may even be evident that they didn't have the appropriate skill set. And depending on how old the house was, it is obvious that they didn't have Google to find out how to do things properly. And so it takes time to fix underlying issues and then get back to the original problem because you're not dealing with a master builder. Here we are dealing with a master builder. And that is what Abraham was waiting for, wasn't it? He was waiting for a permanent home. He was waiting for that special city to come down. So my question is, do we, like Abraham, like the Christians Peter wrote to, the early Christians from Acts 2, the faithful that we read about in Hebrews 11, like Abraham, are we looking forward to that future home? And if so, are we experiencing that sickness that we need to carry us forward, being homesickness? The longingness to be where our true home is. Or are we becoming comfortable, adapting, adjusting, reverting even? Or are we continually striving to change and to grow and to be like the inhabitants of that city? The way they speak, talk, think, and have that heart. Are we homesick? Well, brethren, in our course of our lives, we do get sick. When we're younger, maybe we are more prone to car sickness and motion sickness. And as we grow and develop, maybe we even get love sick. We get heart sick. But brethren, let's endeavor, each and every one of us, to remain homesick for that city that will yet come.